Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode contains distressing themes and descriptions of violence. This podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener caution is advised. From the path that quiet spot on Redcar Beach in North Yorkshire was concealed by sand dunes. As the tide was going out on the crisp morning of April 30th, 1977, the body of a man was held in place by the saturated sand. Eventually, hours after the sun had come up, he was found. There were no apparent signs that he had been injured, and bystanders wondered what happened. Welcome to Season 9, Episode 6 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. Brian Victor Chapman was identified as the man found on the beach that morning. A letter was recovered from his pocket addressed to Brian's estranged wife. He wrote about taking his life, an indicator that Brian Chapman entered the sea by choice. The results of the post-mortem confirmed that Brian's cause of death was drowning. His lungs contained water. There appeared to be no other injuries, and certainly nothing that would indicate foul play. So that was that. Open and shut. A 30-year-old man ended his life at the local beach because he was in turmoil over his marriage. His death was recorded as suicide by drowning. Weeks, then months passed before questions started to be asked about Brian Chapman's passing. In July 1977, nearly 3 months after Brian's body was discovered, an unexpected visitor at the local police station changed everything. A woman in her late 30s claimed to have information about Brian's death. She advised the officers that he did not willfully end his life. He was murdered, and she knew who was responsible. The witness had been spoken to before regarding the incident. After all, she was still legally his wife, even if they were separated when Brian passed away. According to Kalinda Chapman, whose legal name before the incident was Pamela Ann Elizabeth Jean Chapman, she still loved her husband and planned to get back together with him. She said the only reason for their separation was due to Brian's heavy drinking. During her interview, Kalinda explained that she had been there when Brian Chapman died. She said two individuals had surprised her and her husband while they were taking an evening stroll on the beach. She knew both of the young men who attacked Brian, leaving him to drown in the water. Kalinda said she had come forward months after the incident because she feared for her safety. According to Kalinda, John Wright and Alan Stoddart committed the crime. Both men were romantically involved with her at the time of Brian Chapman's death. Soon after going to the police station, Kalinda visited the home of her late husband's father. She was holding a portion of Brian's ashes in a mustard jar. She thought his family might have wanted them. Leaving the price tag on the jar made the exchange even more upsetting for Brian's loved ones, who found Kalinda's choice of vessel for Brian's ashes disrespectful. Also in her hand was a folded piece of paper. Kalinda Chapman had penned a letter to Brian's father, Harold, whom she called Dad. Referencing the Salvation Army when using the term army and mentioning John Wright, one of the men Kalinda claimed had murdered Brian. It read, "Only I know how much I loved him. He was my life. I would do anything to keep him happy and off the drink. Brian was not a believer. He didn't believe in the army like I do. I tried so hard to give him some sort of faith in God. Really. Dad, this is all that keeps me going, knowing he died loving me. I believe that he is waiting for me. I had to go to the police. It was the least I could do for Brian. But please try to realize I had to go when I felt it was safe and that John wouldn't attack my kids or the rest of your lads because he said he would have all the Chapmans in time. The CID, as you know, are trying to pin me in also on his death. Believe, Dad, I needed and loved Brian too much to ever harm him." As the investigation progressed, it became clear there was another side of the story, one in which Brian Chapman had met his end for monetary gain and jealousy at the hands of his wife's devoted lovers as she stood by and watched. It was said by her ex-partners that Kalinda had lured the unsuspecting 30-year-old Brian to the beach to talk about their marriage. John Wright and Alan Stoddart were waiting in a secluded area. During the summer months, hundreds of people would have flocked to the beach with towels, buckets, and spades in hand. However, in spring, the Yorkshire skies were grey and the air still chilly, affording the trio privacy to carry out what they had planned for some time. Kalinda Chapman wanted to be sure that the generously sized semi-detached property with shuttered windows and pebble-dashed exterior that she shared with her husband would be hers and hers alone. She would, however, allow John Wright to stay at the home and they could live happily together, or at least that's what she told him. On a stretch of Redcar Beach, Wright and Stoddart carried out the deed, strangling Brian Chapman unconscious and then leaving him near the incoming tide. Brian was unable to stop the frigid water from entering his lungs. It was put to officers by the accused that Kalinda Chapman watched from the sidelines as her husband's life ebbed away in the North Sea. She had even clasped Wright and Stoddart's coats to protect them from the gathering sand. There, Brian's body lay until it was discovered the following morning. After the killing, Kalinda was eager to distance herself from the men and move on to someone else. Considering John Wright and Kalinda Chapman's complex history, Wright was devastated at the news and tried to end his life. Realizing the situation was becoming increasingly volatile, Kalinda went to the police station first, in an attempt to exclude herself from a potential investigation. Kalinda Chapman was born Pamela Chedji in Croydon, South London in 1938. When she was a girl, her grandparents gave Kalinda her nickname, the word for watermelon in some parts of India. She often stayed with them over the summer holidays. Kalinda was the only daughter of an above-average income family. Her father was a property developer. She was first married in her late teens and had children, but the relationship dissolved after a decade and a half. Since that point, Kalinda had a very complicated love life. Investigators from the North Yorkshire Constabulary were now looking at the death of Brian Chapman through a new lens. The letter he had in his possession when he died appeared to mean something else entirely. Initially assumed to be a suicide note addressed to Kalinda Chapman, it now read as an unsent love letter, one filled with anguish at the separation, but not written with the intent of it being his final correspondence. So how did Kalinda meet the men alleged to have taken her husband's life? Kalinda was introduced to John Wright through her work in County Durham. At the time, Wright was in his mid-teens, but Kalinda, a mother of four, was 2 decades older in her 30s. She worked as a relief staff member in a children's home where Wright was living. He was one of the children Kalinda was meant to look after. John Wright had been living in the system since he was 9 years old. Rumours surfaced, and there were allegations that Kalinda Chapman groomed him. The other children told staff after Wright's roommate witnessed Kalinda getting into his bed. It later came to light that by the second day of her employment, Kalinda appeared naked in front of the teenager. And by the end of the week, John Wright was convinced they were a couple. In the 1970s, things were different. Sexual assault in this context wasn't recognised in the same way it is now. Much like today, the legal age for sexual intercourse in the UK was 16, the same age as John Wright when staff at the children's home came to learn of what was happening. It was a grey area legally. The local authority terminated Kalinda Chapman's employment, and she avoided prosecution. Kalinda's husband at the time, Brian Piper, said John Wright started to visit their home, but Brian was not aware of what had taken place at the children's home. Suspecting the regular visitor and his wife were having an affair after witnessing the teenager groping Kalinda's chest, one day Brian came back prematurely from running some errands. Kalinda and John were upstairs. Brian managed to lie flat and see through the gap at the bottom of the bathroom door. Kalinda was on her back. Brian could recognize his wife's hair. When Brian knocked and called at the bathroom door, Kalinda and Wright didn't leave for a further 5 minutes. As they left, Brian heard Kalinda goading Wright into forcing himself to be sick so they could pass it off as him simply being ill and she was helping him. When Brian Pybus learned what his wife had been up to, he wanted nothing more to do with her and couldn't be convinced otherwise. Kalinda left County Durham and moved to South Bank in York. She found work as a nurse. John Wright had moved to a remand home, but he still visited her and eventually moved in along with 3 of Kalinda's children. Kalinda's eldest, a daughter, was just 2 years younger than John Wright. Many people were told he was Kalinda's godson, even when they attended Salvation Army services together. As autumn came to an end in 1975, Wright was surprised to learn that Kalinda's living arrangements were only temporary. she had met someone else, and this time it was serious. Kalinda married her new love interest of 2 weeks, Brian Chapman. Wright had proposed to Kalinda before she married Brian, but she said no. Brian, who was Kalinda's third husband, worked at a steel mill. His pastimes included darts, snooker, and meeting up with friends at the pub. Originally from Bradford, he had been living with his father and three younger brothers before he got a mortgage and moved in with Kalinda. His family had been taken off guard by the speed of the relationship, as Brian was fairly reserved. Kalinda had been the one to instigate the romance by sending Brian an unsigned card with the words "No Stud" drawn in a horseshoe. It wasn't difficult to figure out who the admirer was, as Kalinda had a pierced nose. This wasn't the first time she had met someone else while she was involved with John Wright. It had occurred while she was on holiday in a village near the North Yorkshire Moors. She even moved in for a time with her holiday fling, but things didn't work out. Although Kalinda had married someone else, John Wright was determined to win her back. When she turned 38 in 1976, he turned up at her new home clutching a bouquet of roses and a birthday card. It was early November, just 2 months before she invited Wright to live in the house she shared with her new husband. Kalinda continued to claim that the young man was her godson. Not long after Wright moved in, Brian moved out. Things clearly weren't working. They reconciled, and Brian subsequently returned, albeit briefly, taking up residence in a spare bedroom. But that didn't last long. He was upset and frustrated, and his wife barely spoke to him. Despite Brian eventually moving out for good, Kalinda was unsettled. She knew she wouldn't be entitled to 100% of the house if they were to divorce. As hectic as her life was at that point, Kalinda had met another man while working part-time in a pub. Forming part of the Fairway Hotel, the watering hole was located in the area of Dormanstown in Redcar. Alan Stoddart was nearly a decade Kalinda's junior, and he worked as a cleaner. Kalinda instigated the relationship by passing Stoddart a note which read, "Meet me tonight at Cowie's Corner, 7 o'clock. Regulars at the Fairway Hotel pub often engaged in conversation with the new barmaid. She told them that she had been married 3 times, explaining the first was an arranged marriage, the second husband was gay, and she said her third husband, Brian Chapman, was an alcoholic. Kalinda and Alan Stoddart started their affair just 1 month before Brian was discovered dead. John Wright would later describe the period when Stoddart was introduced into the equation. It was obvious she was having an affair. One morning this man was asleep in bed upstairs. I deeply resented the presence of Alan. I was in love with Kalinda." John Wright and Alan Stoddart were both arrested and charged with the murder of Brian Chapman. When questioned by detectives, John Wright started to come clean. He explained that on April 29th, he was at work when Kalinda came by and told him she was going to meet Brian Chapman at the beach at 9 p.m. She said she was concerned about the situation and asked Wright to leave work and come along because she suspected there could be trouble. Kalinda claimed that Brian said he would sign the house over to his estranged wife, but she had her suspicions all was not what it seemed. When John Wright walked through Kalinda's front door, he was joined by another man, someone who had recently become a familiar face, Alan Stoddart. Accounts vary as to what happened next, but it is believed Kalinda Chapman drove to pick up her husband and then they left together in her car. Beforehand, she had dropped off John Wright and Alan Stoddart near the beach. Other accounts claim Wright and Stoddart did not get a lift from Kalinda. Wright told detectives, "Before we all left the house, Kalinda said it would be no good doing her husband over. We would have to kill him. We went up behind Kalinda and Brian on the beach. She said, 'Hell, what are you doing here?' Brian remarked, 'You might as well get it over with. I have nothing to live for.'" Wright was asked by detectives if Kalinda had done anything to stop the killing. He replied, "Of course she didn't. It was her who suggested we should kill him in the first place." John Wright, who was 20 at the time of the police interviews, went on to say, "I only killed Brian Chapman out of jealousy. She had been taken away from me twice before. I didn't want to lose her again. I really loved Kalinda. She told me she felt the same about me." Alan Stoddart was also interviewed several times. He provided an account of the attack. "We worked a plan out at Kalinda's house. Down at the beach, John was going to hit Mr. Chapman with a lump of wood, but I told him not to. John tripped him up and put his hands round his throat. I just stood there. Brian struggled at first, but after a bit he moaned and went unconscious. I told John I could not hear a heartbeat because my own was dead loud. John asked me to drag Brian into the sea, and then we left him." Wright and Stoddart explained that after the murder, Kalinda invited them back to the property that their victim owned. She said she would get them both a coffee. According to Wright, he was crying, and Stoddart was shaken up by what had just happened. On the journey back, Stoddart said he felt sick and was told to get out of the car. Kalinda stopped the vehicle. After Stoddart had got out, she closed the door and drove off. Stoddart walked the rest of the journey. When he reached the Chapman's home, the other two were already having drinks. In December 1977, 8 months after Brian Chapman's murder, legal proceedings began at Teesside Crown Court. John Wright and Alan Stoddart stood in the dock, charged with the murder of their lover's husband, Brian Chapman. They pleaded not guilty. Brian's family, his father Harold, brother Jeffrey, and sister-in-laws Julie and Susan, turned up for each day of the 5-day trial. Kalinda Chapman also made a surprise appearance on the first day of legal proceedings. The court was only a few miles from her home on Staintondale Avenue in Dormanstown. Jeffrey Baker, QC prosecuting, said, "This is a story of human callousness almost beyond belief. It revolves around Kalinda, a ruthless woman who ensnared every man with whom she came into contact." The prosecutor told the court that both Wright and Stoddart were, quote, "totally under her spell. They would go to any lengths to satisfy her desires, even so far as to commit murder. On April 29th, a plot was made between these two men, jealous and besotted, and Kalinda, a highly sexed wife, to get rid of her unwanted husband by luring him to a quiet spot on Redcar Beach. The Crown say that the men carried out her bidding to the letter while Kalinda stood by and watched it all." After being referred to as highly sexed and labelled Lady Macbeth, among other things, Kalinda Chapman decided not to attend the rest of the trial. Alan Stoddart was described as having limited intelligence. He had attended a school for children with additional needs until the age of 14 and was often seen as naive. The court was told that he lapped up the attention Kalinda had given him when she worked the lunchtime shift at the pub where Stoddart was also employed. Like Brian Chapman, he was told that John Wright was Kalinda's godson. Stoddart said he feared Wright due to his quick temper. Wright worked nights, so the two didn't often cross paths. Stoddart had been unaware that Wright and Kalinda were romantically involved. When Alan Stoddart saw Brian on the beach with Kalinda that evening, he said he was uncertain why he had stayed. Brian had not come along with his brothers to cause trouble, as Kalinda said he might. Stoddart did admit, however, that he only held Brian's arms back once during the attack near the sea. Nothing more. Counsel for John Wright questioned Alan Stoddart, and the defendant testified, "I thought there was going to be a fight between him and Mr. Chapman. I went along in case Mr. Chapman's brothers were there as well. But when I saw Mr. Wright with his hands around Mr. Chapman's throat, I had to turn my back. I wanted to be sick." Before the attack, it was said that Stoddart and Wright had kept their distance from the Chapmans, remaining unseen behind the dunes while the couple walked the beach. It was 9 p.m. and quiet, other than the steady noise of the sea and the sound of talking as the couple approached. Kalinda and Brian finally turned back toward the car, and the two men in waiting were running out of time. They took the opportunity to come out to confront Brian. Jeffrey Baker, QC, told the court, "Kalinda pretended to be surprised, and she walked slowly away from her husband's side, leaving him to his fate, a fate he probably realized was awaiting him. He did not perhaps try as seriously as he might to resist his two assailants, perhaps resigning himself at the very least to be beaten up. He was thrown into the sand, each of these men holding an arm so he was powerless to move, and then watched by his wife a few yards away, he was deliberately strangled by Wright. He soon became unconscious and they took his pulse to see if he was dead. Stoddart said he could feel a faint beat. So at that news, Wright got to work again on Mr. Chapman's throat, throttling him again." Stoddart had told the police at that point he could not feel a pulse or hear a heartbeat, so they both satisfied themselves that he was dead. The prosecutor continued detailing Brian Chapman's last moments, explaining that from the shore he was carried to the sea. Wright and Stoddart had got their ankles wet dumping Brian Chapman in the water. "This is important," Jeffrey Baker QC said, "because there were two reasons for doing so. The first, to make sure he was dead. The second, to simulate suicide." According to the prosecutor, after Brian Chapman suspected suicide, quote, "Wright had the gall to tell police that Mr. Chapman was a nutcase because he was suspicious that Wright was having an affair with Kalinda, his own godmother." Although both men denied murder was their goal, Wright said there was a scuffle between him and Brian Chapman when he revealed himself from behind the dune. He admitted, "I had my hands on his shoulders. I finished up on my knees. I ended up with one of my knees on Chapman's arm. I don't know how it came about, but I had my hands on his throat." Wright was asked, "Did you exert some pressure on his neck?" "Yes," Wright replied. "How much pressure?" "Very little. When you had your hands on his throat, did you intend to kill him? No. When you had your hands on his throat, did you intend to cause him any serious injury? Wright again responded, no. The defendant claimed that when he heard Brian Chapman gasping for air on the sand, he immediately took his hands off. Despite the prosecution arguing that John Wright had strangled the victim, and Wright even admitting that he put his hands around Brian Chapman's throat, there was no clear evidence that had occurred. If he had been strangled, as the accused claimed, it could have been done with enough pressure to cause the loss of consciousness, but perhaps not quite enough pressure to show obvious signs. It has been known to happen, albeit on extremely rare occasions. The jury were once again reminded of their purpose, and the judge provided a summary of the evidence. Mr. Justice Griffiths said they had to decipher whether there was a plan to kill Brian Chapman, and if so, did the two accused carry it out. Jurors were told Wright and Stoddart could be convicted of murder, or the alternate charge of manslaughter, as they claimed they did not mean to kill him or cause serious injury. Deliberations lasted 3 hours. Both John Wright and Alan Stoddart were found guilty. They were given life sentences for their part in the murder of Brian Chapman.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode of They Walk Among Us is brought to you in association with Scentair. Ever entered a seemingly perfect space only to feel like something was missing? That's where Scentair comes in. With over 3 decades of experience, Scentair leads the scent marketing industry, scenting resorts, retail outlets, event spaces and more, partnering with major brands like Westin Hotels and Snap Fitness. Chances are you've already encountered their fragrances firsthand, and now Scentair is offering you a luxury fragrance experience in the comfort of your home. Visit Scentair.com to explore their online store and infuse your spaces with unforgettable scents. Scentair diffusers are sleek and fill your space with vivid fragrance for up to 300 hours, and the Scentair app lets you schedule your fragrance and control your intensity right from your phone. What's more, all of Scentair's more than 60 fragrances are phthalate-free, cruelty-free, safer families and EcoVadis certified sustainable. Differentiate your space with scent. Try luxury home fragrance trusted by the pros by going to Scentair.com and using promo code AMONGUS for an extra 25% off your first order. That's promo code AMONGUS for an extra 25% off your first order at Scentair.com. Speaking to the press after the trial, Deputy Head of Cleveland CID Robert Redford confirmed that authorities were also seriously looking into the prosecution of Kalinda Chapman for the murder of her husband. The guilty verdicts of Wright and Stoddart bolstered their case. Redford said, "A file in relation to Mrs. Chapman is in the possession of the Director of Public Prosecutions. Transcripts of the evidence given at this trial have been prepared, and together with the file, will be considered by the Director's Office." When news of the guilty verdicts hit the press, Kalinda Chapman claimed that someone targeted her home, smashing three windows in the property. The living room curtains, a vase, and ornaments had been deliberately damaged as the culprits could reach through the broken windows. The house was boarded up, and police officers were appointed to keep a lookout. Kalinda continued to deny any involvement in Brian Chapman's death, telling reporters, "They can call me what they choose to call me because I know I am innocent. I never had anything to do with it. I love my husband too much, much more than anybody will ever know. It took me 38 years to find him, and now he's been taken from me." Regarding the murder of her husband and the situation her former lovers found themselves in, Kalinda said, "I am very pleased that I have got justice for him. All I wanted was to see them go down the line for what they did to him." Despite her denials, on January 12, 1978, 9 months after Brian Chapman's death, Kalinda Chapman was charged with murder. When being interviewed, she told officers that God had been speaking to her and would tell her what to do. Further legal proceedings took place between the murder trials. In February, Kalinda Chapman's 16-year-old son had his own appearance before a judge at Teesside Juvenile Court. He pleaded guilty to conspiracy to murder. He had been present and involved in the initial discussions about killing his stepfather. This had taken place before the introduction of Alan Stoddart, after which the boy was excluded from further planning. Kalinda's son was subject to a care order until his 19th birthday. Kalinda Chapman pulled up outside Newcastle Crown Court in a taxi accompanied by police officers to start her trial in April 1978. She was charged under the name Pamela Chapman, but was still referred to as Kalinda. Gary Cole's QC defending requested that the trial be delayed until an independent pathologist report had been received. Coles also asked for the trial not to be held in the northeast of England as he was concerned about bias from the jury if they had followed news of the case in the local press. Both requests were denied, and the trial began as planned. Kalinda Chapman denied any involvement in the murder of her husband. Humphrey Potts, QC acting for the Crown, summarised the case to the court. On April 29th last year, Brian Chapman was lured to Redcar Beach by his wife and put to death by two men at the instigation of and as a result of a prior arrangement with the accused woman. The accused was present when her husband was killed, and she was as much to blame for his death as the two assailants. The prosecutor argued that the men convicted of killing Brian Chapman were infatuated with Kalinda, and they would be prepared to do anything she asked. When the prosecution put it to the defendant that she had lured her husband to his death, Kalinda Chapman used a lace hanky to wipe away her tears. Throughout the 8-day trial, she was often observed crying in the dock. She appeared inconsolable. Kalinda was told the letter found in Brian's pocket was actually a love letter he never sent. Folded with it was a photograph of the couple on their wedding day a year before. Written in her husband's handwriting were the words, "I will love you forever. If only I could put the clock back 6 months when we were happy together." Brian Chapman's father, one of his brothers and sister-in-laws, attended the trial each day, hoping Kalinda Chapman would receive the same verdict as Stoddart and Wright, who had been sentenced to life in prison months prior. The court was told that Kalinda Chapman explained to the police in her interviews that although she loved her husband, she feared one of the perpetrators, so that was why she had not come forward sooner. Surprisingly, however, her 16-year-old son gave evidence for the Crown. He said there were conversations about getting rid of his new stepfather, Brian Chapman. He claimed the discussions took place between three people: himself, his mother, and one of his mother's partners, John Wright. The young witness and Wright even visited the cliffs at Saltburn with the idea that it could be a suitable location to push Brian Chapman to his death. However, Kalinda's son protected his mother by saying she just wanted her husband to be hurt a bit to teach him a lesson. The teenager's testimony flipped back and forth, and his appearance on the stand became a point of contention. When they returned from casing out the cliffs, Wright told Kalinda that both he and her son agreed it was a suitable place to commit a murder which could be concealed as a suicide, although Kalinda's son argued in the courtroom it was just a plan and never put into action. Furthermore, his mother was having second thoughts about this option. She was getting cold feet, not because she didn't want her husband killed, but because she felt the method was too risky. The second option was then discussed: an attack on Redcar Beach. After this, Kalinda's son, who was just 5 years younger than John Wright, was excluded from further conversations. "I'm not sure what happened then," the witness testified. "Nothing was said to me about what happened." Harry Ognall, QC, representing Kalinda Chapman, cross-examined her son. The youngster agreed there was bad blood between John Wright and Brian Chapman. There had been incidents where the men had big arguments, and John Wright was heard saying that he would do him over. Ognall also spoke about his client's state of mind at the time. Kalinda claimed to be so deeply unhappy about her life she wanted to end it. According to the barrister, she told her son she was going to fling herself off Saltburn Cliffs. John Wright and Alan Stoddart had been convicted of murder, but were called as witnesses for the prosecution. Humphrey Potts QC reminded the jury, "In any view, they are unsavory characters. It is right I say that. At the trial, they denied murder. You must regard them as men who would kill and did kill, and as men who have, through the course of the inquiries into this matter, lied." Jurors were told Kalinda went to the police station as a knee-jerk reaction to try and minimise, even diminish, her involvement in the murder of her husband. John Wright had just been thrown out after he took an overdose, and she feared he could tell the investigators everything. 2 weeks after Brian Chapman was murdered, and with John Wright still living in the property, Kalinda invited her new love interest, a man named Jim Hall, to move in. Humphrey Potts QC went on to say, This woman is a murderer in the sense that she murdered her husband just as much as if she herself had laid hand on him, rendered him unconscious, and put him in the sea. John Wright also appeared as a witness, and his testimony made many people at the trial uneasy when he described how Kalinda singled him out at the children's home. It was said an imbalance of power and John Wright's vulnerability led to his infatuation with her. He was unaware she was married when they first met, and believed he was in love, even when he was often cast aside as she met other partners. Wright worked nights, and during the periods when he lived with Kalinda, he handed over almost all of his weekly wages. The jury were reminded that he was passed off as her godson when he was introduced to other men. Kalinda Chapman decided not to go into the witness box. A counsel, Harry Ognall QC, told jurors this was a choice they could not hold against her. No evidence was presented on her behalf. The barrister made it clear to the jury in his parting statement that it was a murder trial, not a case of judging promiscuity and morals. He said, "It is about proof-positive murder." Kalinda Chapman's tears had stopped when she returned to the courtroom. In fact, she showed no emotion when she was firmly addressed by Mr. Justice Jupp, who said, "You have been found guilty by the jury on convincing and strong evidence of murder. It was a particularly wicked murder, planned well in advance. The sentence of the court is one fixed by law." Kalinda Chapman was sentenced to life in prison for her part in the murder of Brian Chapman. So where are we now? In the wake of the sentencing, Harry Ognall QC confirmed he would be filing an appeal on behalf of his client. It was highlighted among the defense's arguments that while acting as a witness, Kalinda Chapman's son did not physically put his hand on the Bible when performing the oath. An appeal was heard almost a year after Kalinda's sentence. Three appeal court judges discussed the case for 75 minutes. They concluded that the jury would have reached the same conclusions with or without her son's testimony, and nothing new had come to light in the appeal. Jim Hall, the last partner Kalinda lived with before the trial, had been unconscious during the legal proceedings. He had endured serious issues with his stomach. When Jim left the hospital, he was exactly half the weight he had been when he was submitted as a patient. He had written to Kalinda in jail. He said he would be willing to wait for her and hoped her appeal panned out. After her case was dismissed, Kalinda again applied to be granted leave to appeal. Surprisingly, during this time, someone else was waiting for her on the outside, a man similar to Jim Hall, with whom she had also been corresponding with while she was on remand. 40-year-old Ken Crossfield told the press he was willing to wait. "If one day she is given freedom, I would be more than happy to marry her." Ken was convinced of her innocence. He couldn't comprehend that the person writing to him could have anything to do with her husband's murder. In one of her letters sent while she was on remand, Kalinda wrote, "If I go down for life and if I have God's strength to do those years, I have made up my mind to become a nun. This was something I wanted to do when I was very young, but everyone said that a pretty girl like me should not waste her life. In this world, being attractive gets you nowhere. Men say that a pretty woman is evil, and that others step in and take her away from them. Soon after, what was then the Department of Health and Social Security held a tribunal in Leeds. Kalinda Chapman had put in an application for a widow's pension from prison, even though she had been convicted of killing her husband. It was decided that the pension would not be entitled because, quote, a person shall not benefit from the commission of murder. Brian Chapman's father heard about her claim and told reporters, I'm not surprised she had the nerve to do such a thing. She's always been greedy. Subsequently, in May 1979, Kalinda Chapman was again granted leave to appeal, but judges at London's High Court rejected the submission in November of that year. She remained at Durham Prison in what was dubbed the She Wing. Other high-profile female prisoners were housed there at the time, including Moore's murderer Myra Hindley. The first anniversary of Brian Chapman's murder fell at the end of the last trial. His loved ones held a memorial service at a church near Middlesbrough to remember the man they lost. The ashes they had been given by Kalinda were scattered at sea. After the trial, Brian Chapman's father Harold had spoken about his former daughter-in-law's sentence. He believed that considering the average lifespan of a male, Kalinda stole approximately 40 years of his 30-year-old son's life when she conspired with her lovers to kill him. Harold remarked, She has got what she deserves. I'm glad justice has been done. I don't feel the least bit of sympathy. We have learned from this trial that she could have saved his life. The home Kalinda Chapman had been so desperate to keep for herself was sold for under £10,000. Errol Chapman fully expected to receive some correspondence about the matter. He said, I wouldn't be surprised to get a letter from Kalinda asking about the sale and my son's other assets. Thank you for listening, and special thanks to our patrons for their support. For more information on this episode, please see the show notes or visit our website, theywalkamonguspodcast.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.